Welcome to podcast.
This is the podcast for the Museum of the Vanishing Dog. My name is Liz Hamilton. Your name is Sam Hensley.
I'm Sam Hensley.
She's Sam Hensley.
Zither make you lose control. Lose control. Zither make you lose control.
That's a preview of our zither section of today. We are the curators here at the museum, and we every week discuss improvements, renovations, new plans for exhibits that we're working on. So it's my week this week, which is gonna be hard for some of you. Before I really get into it, I wanted to mention again that we are now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. Legit, let me know if there are other hosting platforms that you guys like listen to. I didn't know any others, but it's not that much work to get them up, so let me know if that is good. We also got several extremely sweet reviews on Apple Podcasts this month, so thank you guys so much. They filled us with
yes,
deep delight.
Thank you, Redneck Chaos Wizard. Yeah. That was one, right? And who was the other one, like Bucky the Weasel?
I think it was Goggles the Ferret. I think. Anyway, we loved it.
Yeah, they were really, really nice. Thank you, Goggles the Ferret and Redneck Chaos Wizard. Also, thank you for truly helping us to understand our demographic with just those two usernames.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, and we know it.
That's like the two ends of the spectrum of people who listen to this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird. Spotify lets you see, like, gender analytics for your podcast, and where the graph says ladies and guys, ours just like has percentages for ferrets and chaos
and wizards. Yeah, it's weird.
And then non-binary people, but those are the only three options on Spotify for our podcast specifically. It's weird.
So I have a short story about Nazis today. Not related to my podcast, just related to my experience today. But I wanted to before that, because I'll forget. I think every episode I end up talking about like a book or something that I'm really enjoying right now. And I wanted to shout out a zine that I've been rereading and really enjoying this week called Hellebore.
Oh my God.
Spelled like the plant. Which is an anthology.
Spelled like the what?
The plant. Hellebore. It's like a poisonous
plant. Oh, yeah. Hellebore. It's my favorite.
Okay, it's like a witchy. It's like a witchy poison hallucinatory plant.
Oh, I'm sorry. I like the Bible.
Well, that's how it's called. It's an anthology of British folk horror that has two issues out right now, and they're really good. The last one that I was rereading is about wild gods, and has a nice little interview with Alan Moore in it. And I feel like the Venn diagram of people who listen to us, chaos wizards and ferrets. I feel like that's a closed circle of people who would like us and like them. So I would really suggest you guys look them up. They're on Instagram, everything. Again, that's Hellebore. It's really good to support independent weirdos publishing stuff, especially right now, because everything's terrible.
Yeah, I saw them because you followed them with our account, and I was looking at their art and stuff, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
They've got a really cool style.
Yeah, and super smart writing in there, and I hope they make it past the quarantine.
They will. They will.
I hope they will.
Goths survive.
That's true. So my very short Nazi story, just because, you know, we've been talking about how terrible the world is right now. I had kind of a uniquely American experience today, an experience that I thought, like, oh, this could only be now. So I was sitting in the Starbucks drive-thru line, which already is a lot.
Oh, not Starbucks Nazis.
Okay, so this guy pulled up on
his... I hate Starbucks Nazis.
Right. So this guy pulled up on his motorcycle, and he was, like, covered in swastika tattoos. And I thought, oh, I hope they don't serve him. And he walked in, and then he walked right out. Like, I think they said, get the fuck out, Nazi man.
Okay, good, 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 good.
But then my next thought was like, oh, I really hope he doesn't have a gun. So then I was trapped in the Starbucks line while this angry Nazi was sitting on his motorcycle talking to no one, just staring at the Starbucks, being like, oh, do I have to witness a murder or be murdered today because no one would give this Nazi a Frappuccino? Because I just can't do that today. I have stuff to do. But he left, which is nice. I love living in a part of California that's almost exclusively filled with white supremacists and Marines. Makes me feel real safe. Which, speaking of which, the Marine base has been setting off bombs 24 hours a day for the past 2 weeks, so if there's any kind background explosions, I can't do anything about it. I tried to find like a window when they weren't doing it, but they don't tell us that. So that's everything I got. Do you have anything?
If there are any background explosions on my end, it's just the jar that I keep putting leftovers in and then keeping it under my bed to see what happens.
I hate that jar. Okay, so
that's not true. I don't really do that, but I did eat a bowl of poutine that I dropped on the ground today. So
when she says the ground, she means the outside sidewalk.
I wasn't going to disclose that.
Like the full city sidewalk.
No, it wasn't the city sidewalk. It was a private, exclusive, if you think about it, an exclusive sidewalk just for my 3-story apartment.
What could go wrong?
Just kidding. I would never.
Yeah, just kidding. It was a fake story.
It's a fake story. It's a fake story. Yum. It was good though. Nothing wrong with it. Liz, tell me about this new exhibit. You've got all these papers sprawled out on our desk in front of us. You've sent me some interesting research material.
I did. I sent you some stuff. I've got quite the exhibition plan this week. I've been thinking about doing this since before we really started planning the podcast. Sam has actually heard me give a presentation on this subject before. Although this one will be much different. This was one of my first thoughts when we started planning a podcast. I'm like, oh, I have to... Gotta do this, crazy person. But I really think that, like, providing any context beforehand, rather than doing that, I just want to take us straight into it, because being baffled and bewildered is going to be, like, key to the experience. I think it's going to be one of my more conceptually challenging exhibitions. so just ride with it, okay?
Like, I don't even know what that means at this point.
Yes,
like,
Sam has no idea.
I remember from your presentation, and it does... Can I say my favorite 2-word phrase from this topic?
No. Hold it, because you know we're going to cover it. I know what it is.
That one's kind of a good reveal. I won't say my favorite part, but, like, yeah. I don't... Like, you just skimmed the surface.
I really did. Okay, so this week, we're going to go to our theater. We're going to head over there right now. It's not too far from our office, just a couple corridors over. Mm-hmm. This is where I've staged the exhibition inside the theater. And boy, do I think you're going to like it. I'm kind of stepping on Sam Hensley territory with some of my mechanics for this, but I think the end result will be very different and less sticky. We used to use this theater, which I have retitled the Catling Theater for reasons I will get to shortly. We used to use it for guest speakers and presentations, but it's been undergoing some repairs to its murals, so I've kept it shut for a while, and also, we have no guests, so it's fine, it's a good time.
Yeah, I've actually never been in here before. It's beautiful.
You're gonna love it.
It's gorgeous.
So here we are in front of our theater. There's a chain and a padlock on the handles of the doors, so we can't get in. There's a ticket booth that has been blocked out by a thick black curtain behind its glass and appears to be unmanned. The marquee above the ticket booth reads, "The Republic of Dreams, open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. by appointment only." So I've already called ahead for our appointment. We still need to buy our tickets. So are we ready to go in?
Yes. Okay. Oh, I also just want to acknowledge some other noises that could be occurring. It's raining pretty hard here, which is it's perfect for the atmosphere. I hope it picks up on the mic,
yeah,
but
we just wanna...
on the roof of the museum, there is a not so subtle pitter patter. that could be,
I think it works with it.
Yeah, it works. That might be getting picked up. What does it take?
I brought some museum tokens that you can pay with.
Describe to me the tokens.
It's the same tokens that we use for other automaton.
Our very same automaton tokens. Yeah. Yes. Running dog on one side, a nice little serrated quarter-like edge, mm-hmm. weighty, yep. a good coin.
Absolutely.
A collector's item.
So,
but you're going to want to spend it.
So go ahead and approach the ticket booth and press the bell that says ring attendant.
Okay. Press it. I walk up to the ticket booth.
Ding.
Ding, ding.
Okay, so after you press the bell, the black curtains begin to creak to life with a lot of clanking and grinding. Once they are open, we find ourselves standing in front of a grizzly and a little melting wax automaton. It's a man, you think. It maybe originally was a man, and he has a single eye in the center of his forehead and a wax face that seems to have melted with time. He's been tragically fitted with a little bellhop outfit, which is ill-fitting and frayed at the edges. Around his neck is a wooden sign that says, "Please state name for appointment." So go ahead and say your names. It's the only way he can understand.
I'm not going to say my name is Boner King. I'm not going to say my name is Boner King.
That is not what our tickets are under, so he would not produce them.
Okay. Sam.
And?
Liz.
Thank you. So his mouth, and again, it's not so much a mouth as it is kind of a waxy hole in the center of his face, grinds open and two tickets and a large key fall out. Isn't that fun?
Do I have to reach in his
Yeah, you do.
Ticket?
Yeah. Okay, so we're ready to go in now. The key from his mouth will unlock the chain around the door, so let's go ahead and open it and make sure the door is closed behind us. Wouldn't want anyone else getting in. There's a small slot to return the key, so let's just slip that in back there, but we'll need the tickets in a moment, so hold on to those.
Okay, I'm holding tight onto my special tickets.
Okay. So here we are inside our Catlink Theater, which is a decently sized Art Deco theater built for us in the 1920s. It's pretty elaborately decorated. It's got big murals and some big, like, Art Deco light fixtures. It has plush green carpets and green velvet seats. The theater has an upper balcony and a raked lower level and a large stage. For now, let's head up to the balcony so we can see what we're looking at properly. All the lights have been lowered as if the show is just about to begin. So we're going to stand on the balcony and look down at the theater proper. We can see two things immediately. First, mm-hmm. the stage is completely empty. The curtains are drawn back and some old pieces of scenery lean up against the back wall, but they're obviously in disuse. Secondly, the first 12 rows of seats have been removed and there's a large black bus parked in the middle of the theater. So I've sent Sam a photograph of this bus, which was existed.
It's really cool.
It's.
I want to live there. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. So there's. It's called a traveling van, is what it was called in its creation. But for those who can't see it, and I will post a picture to Instagram. The vehicle's. It's about 30 feet long, which is like RV bus sized. Mm-hmm. It's painted completely black, and there's three little curtain windows on the side, from which a very soft light is glowing. And you can dimly see that it looks like someone is sitting in the driver's seat.
It's like a Winnebago if Dracula lived in it before penicillin was discovered.
Yeah, it's kind of like a hearse bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A hearse camper.
Yeah, like a hearse camper van. It's very square and very black.
Like Nosferatu takes his family to Disneyland in this.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's... now that we've seen the full picture, let's go down and visit the bus. Mm-hmm. So the reason...
Oh, I'm already scratching against the door like a feral cat.
Okay, so the reason the Republic of Dreams is currently by appointment only is because it's our first ever exhibition that requires a live attendant. So I hope you have our tickets ready. So this is Mr. Bex. Mr. Bex. He's our chauffeur. See, he's got a little driving hat. He doesn't speak any English, but you can go ahead and give him our tickets.
Okay.
He's going to be our attendant for this show.
I give him my tickets.
Excellent. So we're going to step inside the vehicle past the driver's seat, which is just a velvet armchair in front of a metal wheel. And we're presented with an interior that does not look much like an RV or a bus. There are dark wooden paneled walls, which seems weirdly formal in a moving vehicle.
Yeah.
And where there once would have been walls to separate, like, the living spaces, there's now just a long carpeted gallery with two armchairs, the same as the driver's, facing the back wall. You can note here that we've also replaced the vehicle's original lighting with replicas of our theater's wall sconces. And they're also quite dim, just to match the outside theater.
Yeah, it's moody. It's moody in here.
Moody. On the back wall, there's a 4-foot by 5-foot rectangular window cut into the wall with a painted canvas curtain pulled over it. Below the window and covering the whole wall are a really elaborate system of cranks, levers, and pulleys. Okay, let's take a seat. The show's going to start
in one of these nice little armchairs.
Yes,
fancy.
So the show's going to start in a couple minutes. So let me explain what I can before it starts. I don't think it will help, but I will give you some background. If you take a look at the canvas curtain in front of us, it will give you an indication of our subject matter. The images of a man, rather elegantly dressed, sitting at his writing desk. A bolt of lightning is shooting out of the top of his head, illuminating the room around him and the sky above. Below him reads, R. Roussel, President of the Republic of Dreams, 1887-1933.
Wow.
Yeah. So today we're going to be observing some selections from one of the major works of the French author and poet who considered himself to be one of the greatest geniuses who ever lived, and who incidentally accidentally invented the motorhome, which is the van we're sitting in, the first ever motorhome that existed.
I was going to ask that. Because, looking at the picture, it's older than any picture of a mobile home of any kind that I've seen.
Yeah, he did. He invented it simply because he was a super eccentric weirdo with wealth to burn. And it once was shown off to the Pope and Mussolini, just because it was weird. So that's fun. So we're looking, I don't really know where to place the invention of the motorhome within the scope of the life of the person we're studying, but I think it is interesting to note. So we're looking at Raymond Roussel. He has two major novels, Impressions of Africa and Locus Solus. And they are, they're not so much novels as they are excruciatingly detailed accounts of inventions. First, a set of inventions presented to an imagined African king at his coronation by a group of stranded Europeans, and then in Locus Solus, a set of inventions shown by a reclusive inventor-scientist on his sprawling Parisian estate. There aren't...
Wow.
Like, there aren't, like, plots. Like, yeah. It's just, like, a description of these, incredibly, exhaustingly detailed inventions or wow. Like acts. He also has a really long, complicated poem called New Impressions of Africa, which is a series of events that spiral in and out of a long series of parentheticals, but like I don't really have time to get into it. So we're gonna cover Impressions of Africa today exclusively, which I think is actually kind of the lesser of the two novels, or the less influential, maybe. Yeah. But it's the one that I find inherently more delightful. And I tried to include both, and the episode was starting to push over 2 hours, so I thought, I'll die if I do both. And Locus Solus has a lot of really complicated scenarios that involve mysteriously reanimated corpses, and it just, like, wasn't working with what I was doing.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's talk Roussel. It would not be surprising if this is a name you have never heard before, despite being a very, influential author to a lot of artists and writers and poets. It's a kind of, like, books that you would hear cited a lot, but assume no one had actually read. Well, I read them for you guys, so you don't have to. So, Roussel was from France. He inherited this like unbelievably massive inheritance as a teenager, and he used all of his money to fund vanity publishing for his almost completely ignored body of work. Despite his belief in his completely uncompromising genius, his works were absolute disasters in their time and ours.
Same.
He never got over it. Like, he never understood why they didn't work. He didn't understand any of it. He lived this, like, very lush, very eccentric, very weird life. And he traveled extensively with his chauffeur and the woman who was his nurse and beard. But he went, like, to Australia, New Zealand, Japan, China, North Africa, India. But said, from all of these travels, I never took anything for my books. It seems to me that is worth mentioning, since it clearly shows how much imagination accounts for everything in my work. So, Russell deeply believed this, that for his work to be, like, truly great, it had to be totally free of outside influence or experience.
So he's like DeviantArt furries who brag about not looking at pictures when they draw.
Kind of.
That's a specific analogy.
I guess.
Revealing some specific trauma that I have.
But, like, I think this is important to think about because it's a really weird thing to think. Like, when we're looking at the relative grossness of this, like, sort of exoticism and imperialism of this French man writing about Africa, like, it's racist and gross, but the premise that this man who'd, like, been to Africa and travel over the world would be so insistent on ignoring all of his own experiences and craft a vision of Africa that arose solely from his imagination, it's like a weird concept. Yeah. So, like, I read there's a New Yorker article by David Wallace that said impressions of Africa is less a negative vision of Africa than an unwillingness to consider it a real place at all. So, like, it's problematic, but it's so deeply strange that, like, I kind of don't even know what to do with it. Like, that's such a weird way to get into something.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to say before we get started is what I really think is the real... Well, the craziest part of this is that as a way to, like, try to gain more fame, Russell he paid for elaborate stage productions of both of his novels.
Oh.
So everything we're going to hear and see and describe was put on before a real audience, and they hated it. But that's the thing that I can't get over. So
now you get to see it in our museum and hate it just like the just as hateable as it was the first day it showed. A faithful reproduction.
Well, I think
I have a question.
Yeah.
How did he afford that lavish lifestyle? Like, I assume he, like, came from some kind of money. I wonder
he came from money, and he just got this huge inheritance when his parents died, and he spent all of his money being a weirdo and vanity publishing all of the books because he thought he was the most brilliant writer of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's like the Dorian Gray of mobile homes.
Yeah, except, like, with more, like, barbiturates. And suicide attempts, I guess. Yeah.
So the Dorian Gray of mobile homes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Absolutely. So let's start. Like I said, that, you know, his books are just a long series of detailed descriptions of stuff. So that's what we're going to look at. So we don't have to be thinking about the plot because there isn't one. Mm. So as you can see, there's a little bell on the wall that says "Ring chauffeur to begin performance." So go ahead and ring the bell.
I'm ringing it furiously.
Okay, she's tapping it. Okay, so I'll describe to our listeners what's happening. Mr. Bex, the driver, has sprung up from his armchair with the sound of the bell and is hurrying back to the wall that's covered in wheels and cogs.
Oh, I forgot that would require a real person to act. That was rude of me. I didn't mean to. I don't want to stress Mr. Bex out.
I know. He doesn't speak any English. He does not know what's happening.
Mr. Bex.
So he jumps up and he flips a switch that dims all the lights. And then he begins a very complicated process of turning the levers and cranks and lifting and lowering stuff. As he works, The canvas lifts slowly to reveal a miniature stage showing a ship, the Lynceus, you can read, painted across the side, that is churning on a sea of horizontal spiral columns that are rotating quickly. The lights on the stage flash, a bolt of lightning, and then the ship sinks below the waves. The chauffeur pulls more levers, and we're offered an immediate scene change with a quickly lowered backdrop. This time, it's a lush painted jungle with two small doors, one on each side of the backing, with a circular track running between them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for this part, I want you to visualize, like a big cuckoo clock. Or maybe, like, not like a cuckoo clock, but like a big automaton clock. Okay. Or, like, I was describing to Sam, it's like the outside of It's a Small World. Like, it's just things moving along a clock, like a circular track, right? I don't know how else to explain it.
So, it's like that, for the viewers who have seen Shrek, it's like when they get their picture taken and the little model of Duloc sings to them. It's kind of like that. Like an elaborate cuckoo clock with a population. It's a populated cuckoo clock.
Yeah.
That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, I was looking at videos of the automaton clock in Prague, which has,
that thing's
like a rotating
crazy
wheel.
That thing's bonkers.
A lot. Yeah. So the door pops open on the left side of the stage, and the wheel begins to turn, and a series of wooden figurines begin to slowly spin clockwise on the track, each one moving in a rhythmic, stilted motions. It's obvious that Mr. Bex is operating all of this with all of his levers, but it's still moving quite slowly. So I'm going to describe the figurines that we have on our track. So first, we see a large banner being held up by 12 cats. Each cat has a ribbon tied around its neck. The banner reads, in huge shining letters, "The Incomparables Club, a presentation in honor of the coronation of Emperor Talu VII, Emperor of Panukele, and the King of Drelchkaf." A small boy appears to be running after the cats. He's holding four more of them in his arms. One is clinging to his scalp, and one trails behind him. The wheel continues to turn. That was it. It's moving slowly enough for you to see what is happening with each figure, but you can't quite understand why you're seeing it.
No, not at all. My mouth is just open.
It's true. Her mouth's completely agape. So next, we see a mustachioed man with a wooden leg and a traditional Breton costume. So which is like...
Oh, duh.
A black round hat and a jacket with two rows of buttons and like really billowy plus fours that come in tight at the knee. This was described in detail, so I'm describing it in detail. He comes into view. As the cogs continue to turn, he raises his arms in the air to lift a musical instrument to his mouth. It's long, pearly white, and has clearly drilled holes like a flute running up its length. He begins to play a song, a tinny music box melody that Mr. Bex is operating with another lever.
Wow.
To your horror, as he plays, you realize that the instrument is no flute. It's a bone. A human leg bone.
Oh.
His human leg bone. The
no.
clockwork turns. The Breton's music box fades out and he
He's just gone now?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, the music box fades and disappears behind the second clockwork door. Now, an even more confusing vision. A sculpture of a man in agony, pierced through the chest with a spear, on a small platform with four wheels. As the clockwork turns, he begins to move independently, blowing back and forth along his tracks as if he were weightless and moved by the slightest breeze. Are you picturing it?
Yes.
So, upon closer inspection, the figure is not made of wood like the others, but has been intricately constructed out of whalebone corset stays, which are like a stay is like the boning in a corset, but these are whale bones, which is what corset stays used to be made of. Each one has been hammered and curved into an achingly lifelike form. He's made of thousands of them, each one bent to perfectly represent the human form in agony. As his platform sways back and forth on its tracks, you lean in closer to see what the tracks are made of. They think maybe like railroad tracks. They look like railroad tracks. But look a little closer.
Okay, they look strange. They're not.
They're too red and too wet to be made of metal.
Oh, no.
They're made of calf lungs. calf lung suspending the whalebone man. The clockwork turns. As our next figure comes into view, it stops completely with the figure's center stage. It's immediately apparent that this is a more complicated setup than the others, and Mr. Bex runs to the opposite side of the stage window.
More complicated?
Yes, to begin operating a totally different series of levers and cranks.
Is this, like, his career? Like, how long? He's a very talented man, Mr. Bex.
He's very, we're lucky to get him.
We are paying him exorbitantly.
Yeah, he made this. Okay, so, it's very difficult to discern what we're looking at first, unlike the other ones. So, there is a man standing next to a small table upon which sits a stringed instrument with a bowl of water suspended above it with metal arms. So, the instrument okay. is a zither, which is, it's like a cousin of an auto harp, the only instrument I ever found any joy in playing. And it's like a flat stringed instrument, but it doesn't have keys like an auto harp, right? It's just like a flat, like harp over wood. Do you know what I
mean?
Yeah.
I can picture it. It is a hard thing to describe. You know, if you're at your phone, look up a quick zither.
Yeah, this one is...
Treat yourself to a quick JPEG of a zither.
This one is specifically a Hungarian zither, because there's a lot of different kinds of zithers, but that's what this one is. I couldn't think of a better way to describe it. It looks like a flat auto harp.
You'd think there couldn't be that many, and yet...
Yeah, there's really a lot, and they have very different shapes, but this one is totally flat.
Zither make you lose control.
It will.
Honestly, what does a zither sound like? That's something I should
have. You'll find out in a moment.
Oh, that's right. thank God our editor will throw in.
Thank God our wonderful editor will send the MP3 that I've sent over.
Highly competent editor. So there's the suspended bowl of water.
Above a zither, okay?
Above a zither.
So the man standing next to the table extends his arm towards the instrument. And a big fat earthworm slides out of his sleeve and into the bowl of water. The earthworm begins to writhe, and you can see suddenly that the bowl of water has small holes drilled into the bottom of it. And as the worm is writhing frantically, it starts to block out different holes and allows water to drop slowly onto the strings of the zither, causing enough force to produce a sound from the strings. It takes a moment for him to warm up, splashing and turning inside his little bowl, and then he finds his rhythm and begins to play this song for us.
Yes.
At this point, Mr. Bex is panting furiously as he continues to operate the theater. The song is extremely complex maneuver. As it ends, still breathing heavily, he slowly cranks the wheel that lowers the lights of the theater and brings the final curtain down. That's the end of our show. Sam is still sitting just with her mouth open. I'm thrilled. Hey. So, okay. So at this point, let's ask Mr. Bex for some refreshments. Just ring the bell again, I guess. And as I said, he doesn't speak in English, but we'll review Raymond Roussel. Okay. Because I'm sure at this point, many of you, including Sam, are thinking, hey, what the fuck was any of that?
That's where I'm at. Also, like, there's refreshments?
Yeah. We're a this very is, like, classy an insider institution. Tour,
or, like, how do, like... No, is there, like, a sign that's like, don't forget about snacks? Like, a big turkey leg?
No. It's just light refreshments. Crackers.
Okay.
You know. We're a professional institution. So, okay. So you guys are thinking, hey, what was that?
Yeah, exactly.
But, here's the thing. That's it. That's the novel. That's what it is.
How dare you?
Okay, so as I mentioned at the beginning, the plot of Impressions of Africa involves a group of shipwrecked Europeans traveling from Marseille to Buenos Aires, who all just happen to be genius inventors, scholars, and savant performers. And they're there to attend the coronation of Emperor Talu VII, who incidentally often appears to be in drag, the ruler of the fictitious African kingdom of Panukele.
Yeah.
The Europeans are referred to as the Incomparables because they're so skilled and genius.
Ooh, they're so special.
Yeah. So
why were they, like, what, were they just touring? Like, what was, how'd they get stranded?
The ship sank, and they're waiting for someone to pay their ransom. The ship that we saw at the beginning that sank.
Yeah, okay.
So they're being held by the Emperor, and inexplicably decide to give him this incredibly detailed display of all of their inventions and skills. There's no reason why this should happen. So I would like to say I only really scratched the surface of the Incomparables. I presented my favorites, including the cats that play a very coordinated game of tag with a little boy.
I liked that part.
Yeah, there's also there's like a very complicated weaving machine, a super powerful magnet, a statue of Immanuel Kant, a man who shoots the shell off a soft-boiled egg, a 12-year-old boy who violently
with
kills
a gun?
A rat. Yeah. A painting machine.
Wait, what are the 12?
It's just a 12-year-old boy who kills a rat. That's it. He's a genius. There's a bunch of women who do a dance where they just burp a lot. And then there's some acrobats who move so fast they appear to be standing still. Oh, there's also a little boy who makes train sounds with his mouth. The Incomparables.
There's a painting machine. It's a lot to process.
Tell me about it. And it's only like 300 pages. So, again, there's no plot. That's just what it is. It's just a series of descriptions
of increasingly
bizarre. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the Native Africans. And if you think that sounds racist, I don't know if it is because it's so weird. It's just ladies who burp really fast while spinning.
That I don't know how to process it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I thought, ooh, is this going to be problematic? I don't know. So this is more or less the same format that Locus Solus takes, which is his other sort of more well-known novel. I would say well-known with quotation marks around it also. it involves a group of visitors coming to the home of this fabulous inventor, Marshall Cantarell, as he shows them all his discoveries and inventions. One of which is a flying paver that creates a shifting mosaic of human teeth. There's also a big glass diamond filled with water, a hairless cat, a dancing woman, and a singing decapitated head of a French revolutionary. And then there's all of these incredibly detailed tableau vivants of reanimated corpses that are reliving all of their sort of greatest life events.
Cool.
You know, I don't know what to do with that. So that's where we are. I don't really know what to say about them. I think they're very interesting novels. I think if you were going to ask me whether or not I would recommend reading them, I would say no.
So the one, Impressions of Africa, is only 300 pages?
Yeah.
Huh.
It packs a lot in. I mean, no plot or, like, character development, but a lot of talk
it
about
it. Really makes me wish there was a plot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't I know it. But think of that as a stage play, where you're just sitting in a stage and watching those things happen in front of you, going, like, the fuck is this? And it was in, like, 1911, and there's photographs of it, so you can see that it was a real
thing. I was
going to
say, is there any documentation of the original plays? Because I want to know a lot more about that.
No,
I'm very fascinated by that.
I just know that people hated it. And there's a couple photographs of the stage play, but they didn't. That's pretty much all that happened. So again, I would say probably no, if you wanted to read them.
Interesting.
I think they're good to have on hand as references. Like, yeah. I think knowing the gist is, like, relevant as you look at the way they've influenced other works. Like, the Surrealists are super into Raymond Roussel. Foucault wrote his only book on literary criticism on Raymond Roussel. And a lot of, like, weirdo museums reference Roussel a lot because Locus Solus kind of is just, like, a weird museum. They're, like, the most detailed descriptions of the most exhausting art exhibits in the whole world.
Yeah.
But the other thing is about Roussel, just to add more complication onto it.
Yeah.
If you spoke French, reading them is apparently supposed to be a very different experience.
Really?
Yeah. Roussel had this very elaborate system for wording things that he revealed in a novel that was published after his death, where, like, he would turn a phrase into, like, separate and often meanings by changing one or two letters. So, like, things would have meanings within his work just by changing a letter.
Well.
But, like, all of it is lost in an English translation. Like, I didn't even put in examples of it because I don't, like, I don't understand it because I don't speak French. And it puts me in a really weird spot as a reader because I'm, like, I know that I'm, like, missing all the joke. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they make more sense in French, but I think you're getting another layer of of mean. So, there's only one biography of Roussel written in English by Mark Ford. And I really struggled to find any people talking about him in any language but French, because French, the language is so foundational to the way that he writes, and I think is kind of why people liked him a lot. Like, a lot of poets were really influenced by him. But I don't really even know what his system of writing was, because I can't tell. But it's, I mean, like, it's not to say that I don't think Roussel is worth taking a really good look at. John Ashbery said of Roussel, "What he leaves us with is a body of work that is like the perfectly preserved temple of a cult which has disappeared without a trace." Which I love!
That's so sick.
Right? And I sent Sam a video of a whole art exhibit that was based on Locus Solus.
Yeah, I was going to click back to that and just, like, because, like, I had...
Questions?
The soundtrack of...
I told you it had an inexplicable soundtrack. Yeah, this is, like, you'll find a ton of music inspired by Roussel, and there was... I can't remember where that was, the exhibition that I sent you. There was one big Locus Solus exhibition where the art looked dreadful, but interesting that they had it.
I'm looking at the Locus Solus right now. These, like, chill house beats.
Yeah, you know what you think of with Raymond Roussel. So that's you know, like, I think it's really interesting that Roussel also, like, he managed to become kind of, like, the ultimate experimental writer for experimental writers. He had no interest in being avant-garde. He didn't like the Surrealists. He only loved Jules Verne and Victor Hugo. Like, he thought he was very traditional. And he really thought that he was doing, like, really normal work.
Really normal, important genius work.
Right! Right.
I'm really fascinated with the separation between his, like, self-perception and actual...
Right, and then the whalebone on the calf lungs.
Perception of who he was.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah, I love in Locus Solus, there's the tooth mosaic. It's like this floating, like, piece of equipment for paving pathways that's sort of hanging in the air like a dirigible. And as it moves... it starts, like, magnetizing all these teeth that have been inlaid into the pavement, and they start making different images based on the, like, whiteness and brownness of the teeth.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Based on, like, responding to the magnets that are in the dirigible.
Yeah, I don't know if it's magnets or, like, magic. It's not magic. Okay, he always comes up with, like,
Is it a tiny dirigible?
No, it's called a paver.
Oh, paver.
I don't know what that is. But... He often has, like, really elaborate names for new secret serums that scientists have come up with to create these things. Like, all the resurrected corpses, there's, like, a special chemical that's been injected into them. Huh. And that's why they can relive all their
greatest life achievements as corpses.
So, like, with that one, are they, they're moving, or they're just, or is it, okay, I was imagining kind of, oh, our favorite friend, our special friend, Gunther von Hagens. I was imagining, like, Gunther von Hagens situation, but they're, like, still going at it.
Well, they're, I mean, not quite. What they're described as tableau vivants, which is, like, a living tableau, so if you think of, like, Pageant of the Masters, where people are dressed up in paintings. Like, people are alive and breathing and kind of moving, but, like, not really. Like, they're also pretending to be still. That's what they are. But they're, I mean, they are resurrected corpses.
Wow. Yeah, like Jules Verne. And they're the authentic corpses. Like, in this hypothetical situation, they retrieve the bodies of... Okay.
You can see
maybe
why
specific names dropped of, like, who they were?
Oh, no, they were all French people. I didn't know who they were.
Okay.
They were all French people from, like, the 1800s. But you can see why I didn't try to reinterpret that one into our miniature play. I couldn't think of a way to get that across. But, like, Locus Solus, they're so much more complicated than the ones in Impressions of Africa, which is just, like, one after the other of these, like, super weird inventions.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say also, like, rather than recommending actually trying to slog through Impressions of Africa or Locus Solus, I would strongly recommend reading The Vorr, spelled V-O-R-R-H, by the British author and sculptor Brian Catling, who I named our theater after, which is probably my favorite book series that I've read in the past 5 years or so. Raymond Roussel is a major character in that book. And that's how I stumbled upon what a super weirdo he was. Those books, they are kind of broadly about this fictional German colonial town next to a big forest in Africa that houses the Garden of Eden, kind of as the world is about to start World War II. But listen, these books have everything. They have cannibals, Cyclops, Edward Muybridge, super frightening angels, weird sex stuff, detailed violence, William Blake, famous schizophrenic painter of cats, Lewis Wayne.
That guy.
Yeah, he's also a major character. Obviously. It's fantastic. It feels like a book specifically tailored to my personal interests.
I like how indulgent it sounds. Like, instead of, like, writing new people inspired by specific historical characters, he was just like, no, they're there. They were there.
Yeah, Edward Muybridge is a main character, and he also does a lot of work with the British physician who discovered eating disorders, and the woman who built the Winchester Mystery Mansion. Obviously.
Sarah Winchester?
Sarah Winchester, yeah. I love Brian Catling. He's a performance artist and weirdo. I built a whole body of work around his essay, The Stumbling Block Is Indexed, in my second year of grad school. And I think I originally picked up the book just because it had a very long and glowing endorsements from Philip Pullman, Alan Moore, Jeff Vandermeer, and Tom Waits on the cover. Which, like, yes, absolutely. But I think that's where I would suggest turning to. If you guys listened to this and said, like, I want to hear that. I would start with The Vorr, because it's
You're making
readable.
Me want to read it. Is it fairly accessible? Like,
I don't know if I'm the person to ask.
Like, do you think I could read The Vorr and, like, understand roughly what was happening at all?
Yeah, I think it has so many characters and so many plot turns that you just kind of have to, like, go with it.
Yeah, you just let it wash over you.
Yeah, you really have to, and you have to stop trying to remember who different people are. And also, there's a lot of extremely detailed violence in it, which might be off-putting for some people, but not me!
And weird sex stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a woman gets cured of her blindness through a corkscrew penis attached to a dwarf cyclops who was raised by robots filled with Bakelite and gel. I love this book!
Wow.
It's so good. It's so good. He has sex with the Bakelite robots with his corkscrew penis. It's fantastic. Oh, and the house is also alive and can be played like a musical instrument. It's fantastic.
I want to read it. When was it published? It sounds like some crazy shit from, like, the late 1800s.
Oh, no,
like,
no, no, no. It was... I think the first one was published in 2012, and the final book
that's so crazy.
Was, like, 2 years ago.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it is. So,
Wow.
So, I can't recommend it enough. I'm sure it's not for everyone, but I just wanted to say that, like, I think Raymond Roussel is so interesting, but maybe to know as a person and to experience as a character, a fictionalized character in these books, rather than trying to tackle his incredibly baffling writing style. So that's it. How did you like my terrifying exhibit today?
I'm more baffled than I have been by any topic or exhibit we have had so far.
I know. I told you it was going to be conceptually,
which I know is the point, and that's why I'm mad. But like,
I know. I felt like it was kind of a weird one for me. Like, no dead people, no religious icons, just a straight up lunatic and a series of robots.
I am. So, like, is this a permanent exhibit?
Yeah.
Or, like, the bus? Okay.
I'm sorry, you want to try to move a bus out of our theater?
I just noticed that it's on wheels.
We do have to pay Mr. Bex till he dies, and he does live there, but,
That's good. I like that. I'm also curious about Mr. Bex.
Oh, Mr. Bex is, Mr. Bex. He's one of the inventors from The Incomparables. He created a musical instrument that could play all of the sounds of every instrument through heating up different parts of metal. You know.
So naturally, he is adapted to run a highly complex automaton.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
detailing
that's why,
his
that's
own
why
story.
That's why I hired him. Couldn't pick the
peg leg.
I assume
he speaks French?
Yeah, only French.
Interesting. Huh.
So you can come talk to him. He's so lonely if you speak French.
Oh,
I did our automaton Cyclops because Brian Catling does most of his performances as a Cyclops. I love Brian Catling.
How does he do that? Like
makeup? Sometimes he wears like a big Cyclops like prosthetic. And sometimes he does performances where he holds a mirror in the center of his face. So it looks like he just has one eye.
Oh, he's very scary when he's in his Cyclops makeup. That's alarming.
He's wonderful. And a Cyclops is a major figure in the book. He has a lot of theories about Cyclopses, which I didn't know was a thing people had. So I love it. He has a lot of theories about different hemispheres of the brain in relation to Cyclopses. So look him up. I think I tried about 1,000 different ways to do this exhibit, and I'm very happy with what I chose. I think it gets across how confusing it is and how hallucinatory it is.
This guy.
Plus, there's a
just
worm
looking
zither.
At pictures of Brian Catling. Mm-hmm. And there's a worm zither. That was the two-word phrase I really wanted to bust out at
worm
the start.
Zither.
You gotta save the worm zither.
Yeah, but can you imagine being a French person in 1911 and seeing a stage play where there's a worm zither? What the fuck would you do with that?
Apparently they got pretty mad.
Yeah, mostly be really mad about it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, so like as for like the reference research that you sent me, like the opening one right now. The Salzburg Mechanical Theater.
Yeah. I was thinking a lot about mechanical theaters, but that one is really crazy. You can watch a YouTube video about that one. It has like hundreds and hundreds of little figures that all move.
It's crazy.
It's very crazy. I'm surprised.
And it's a lot larger than you would expect from looking at a picture of it. Like a minute into the video, this sort of basement dwelling looking clock man waltzes out.
The clock man. Yeah.
Like he looks like a guy who's an expert in automaton.
Yeah, he sure does.
And he has a cool voice.
Yeah.
He's like 120 figurines operating in perfect unison.
Yeah. Yeah, I really, like, I was thinking a lot about, remember when we went to the Museum of Jurassic Technology and they had all those little windows that had, like, mechanized old theater displays?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking about. when I started that. We, like the roiling sea with all the... Mm-hmm.
I think when we do a Patreon, we should do, like, museum tours, like walkthroughs and record ourselves. I think that's allowed, if we just record ourselves.
I'm
like,
sure they would not allow it at the Museum of Jurassic Technology. But
secretly.
I also think that, like this exhibit, if we recorded ourselves in there, it wouldn't make any more sense than it would if
it
wouldn't.
Just described it out loud. It wouldn't. Or like museum reviews, because I just, like... We've got to do an episode about the Museum of Jurassic Technology in some way. It's so insane and influential.
If you guys aren't familiar, I don't really know how to explain it to you. It's a museum, in Los Angeles that I think is probably the most major influence for our podcast, I would say.
There's
a really... what's the book about him called?
I read the whole thing.
I also read the whole thing. There's a very good book about
Something's
Mr. Wilson.
Cabinet of Wonders. What's
Mr.
his name?
Mr. Wilson's
Cabinet. Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Wilson Cabinets of Wonder by Lawrence Westler, maybe, is all about the creation of that museum, and it's very, very good. I also, like, I was thinking a lot about the museum in LA called the Villa Slavice Panorama when I was doing it. The Villa Slavice Panorama. It's a panoramic...
I don't know that one.
Theater. I know, I didn't know about it when you were visiting. It's a 360 painting that you walk into, and it also has the only Arctic trading hut in the lower 48, which I find deeply delightful.
Like an active one?
You can send postcards from there. Yeah. It's an operational, like, a post office box. And an Arctic trading hut, so... I hope it makes it past the quarantine also, because I don't know how it's funded.
I hope so, too. I know there's so many places that are... Museums are struggling right now.
Yeah, museums are really struggling. And I miss museums very badly.
Me too. I miss museums more than most things right now.
I also feel that way. I keep thinking about, like, man, I wish I could, like, see some things, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I think I miss, of all the things that are closed, very justifiably, I miss museums the most. Also, the little miniature stage that this couple seems to have constructed is very fun. It's a video Liz sent me before we recorded it's from 1933, and it's just this perfectly recreated little classical stage, and it's got all the like levers and mm-hmm. shit that lower the curtains and move the platforms.
Yeah,
you can extend or withdraw the like front edge of the stage, and then my favorite part is that they have like backdrops that lower in and can come out, and like clearly this guy has a very great technical eye, and then the backdrop that he lowers in is like so bad.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
It's like this perfect exemplary craft. It's like to scale and proportional in every single way, and then he lowers it. It looks like a child's painting.
Yeah, it's really good.
The inside of a house. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts?
I don't know, anything else we want to shout out? I feel like I already shouted out Simon Hanselman. He's been one of my favorite creators during the quarantine.
I don't know if you have. Hanselman. I don't know what he does.
Have I? Do you know him?
Uh-uh. I don't think
so. Oh my gosh. Trigger warning for, like, a lot of stuff in his content. Like, don't go read his content and then get shocked and then come back to me. I'm sorry, this is me warning you. Like, there is, most of the plot of the story is a grown woman who's in a relationship with, like, a normal cat. So, like, she's a witch and he's her familiar. He's fully sentient, but on every physical level, he is just a normal cat. Simon Hanselman he's been doing a daily quarantine comic, which is like
fun.
It's wacky. He's a very good creator and I enjoy his work a lot. He just released a new book, Seeds and Stems. This is new novel popping out. What else?
Oh, and you said last podcast did an interview with Colin Dickey, who I now have to reference every single episode.
Yes, and I'm reading through the Colin Dickey book that you sent me.
That's good, right?
Was that for Keepsies? Am I sending that back to you?
Or? No, that was for Keepsies.
Okay, good, because I've written in it, which I thought was like kind of okay if you wanted it back.
Yeah, no, it's
but
for you.
But today I did leave it in the rain on accident, so I'm glad that's why now.
It has a really good episode on the Kentucky meat rain, a good chapter on it, which I really love.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I got that.
It's a good book.
Did I tell you? Hmm. He didn't mention this in the book. Transylvania University in Kentucky. I've surely mentioned this to you before, because we have to go. They have the only surviving sample of the meat rain.
Yeah, the Moose Neck Museum.
You've seen it in person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've seen it in person?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. What? Okay, when? So I went with Maddie and some of her friends to the Moose Neck Museum. The Moose Neck Museum is a medical history museum at Transylvania University in Lexington, Kentucky. And you just have to call, like, one angry old physics professor who will show you, at a time of his choosing, things that he's discovered in back rooms. And it is fantastic.
Oh, Liz, we have to take me.
I know, but, like, we
have to do it again.
I tried to get us in a couple times, but he won't do any tours on the weekends or, like, the summertime.
Oh, that's right. We were planning during school. We couldn't work it with our schedule.
Yeah,
we
had such a terrible schedule that, like, I couldn't find a time that agreed with just this one man.
I love that so much.
But very good. So if you're in or around Lexington, Kentucky, I would strongly suggest trying to go, because he had a ton of wax penises, which I loved. And he also has a ton of, like, I didn't know that when doctors went out in the field, they would make plaster casts of, like, stillborn babies with extra feet. And so there's, like, a bunch of those.
Oh my, like, are they from Kentucky?
I'm sure they are, because Transylvania was, like, one of the first medical museum or medical schools in the area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really think of Kentucky as a place with, like, a rich medical history. We aren't known for that. Like Philadelphia has the Mutter Museum.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's somewhere like the fact that there's a collection like that in Kentucky is just completely
And little
unknown.
Yeah. They had, like a 3-foot by 3-foot bazaar also, which I loved very much.
They could be making
gross.
A lot of money off of that if they wanted to advertise to, like, freak goth hipsters. Like,
I know!
Us. Like,
I know. It was
That's a whole industry that they aren't tapping into.
I know. Well, it's just because it's one guy. But yeah. I strongly suggest. And they appear to be opening their universities in the fall, which is absolutely insane. So maybe you can go.
Great. Great. Good. Fantastic.
Yeah,
everybody's making good calls.
We found out that a lot of the colleges and schools in California now probably have Legionnaire's disease from sitting closed since March. So that's going to be a fun thing to happen in the fall.
What's Legionnaire's disease?
Legionnaire's disease is like a super terrible contagious disease you get from mold in sitting water in buildings.
Oh, ew.
So because, like, the
air... Is that the one you can get from cut flowers in vases?
I don't think so. I feel like I've heard of that. From, like, hot tubs.
There's one that's in hospitals a lot because of all the cut flowers in water sitting.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I know there's a Sawbones episode about it that was very informative. But because all
we
this
love
water
Sawbones.
And air conditioners has just been sitting for so long that they think everyone has Legionnaires or could possibly be exposed to Legionnaires disease now, which attacks
good.
The lungs. So, great.
Great.
All right. That was a bad note to end it on. I don't know. Anything else?
Content that has been particularly uplifting to me lately, since I'm a YouTube whore, and Amelia Farts and Jenna Marbles both retired, at least temporarily this year, is Jenny Nicholson. If you like things that I talk about, you will like it. If you only like the things that Liz talks about, you'll think it's really stupid.
It's nice that we have different circles of
matter. It's really the crux of this whole operation. Imagine if just one of us were running this museum.
It'd be insufferable. Yeah.
I mean, if it was just you, it would probably be like a good museum. Imagine if just me was running.
I feel like it would just maybe be like a big pit in the ground filled with stuffed lambs.
Yeah, it would be like a bad toy store. It would be like the it would be like the worst toy store. It wouldn't be a museum.
No, it would just be sort of a place you press your face to the windows of.
Edutainment.
Yeah. Gross. Okay, right. well, I don't know, do all that, listen to that. Probably don't read Raymond Roussel unless you're French. But that's it. I enjoyed today's episode very much. It brought
Take
me great joy.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Be nice to yourselves.
Yeah. Take a nap. Drink
take
some
a
water.
Nap.
Wash your face.
Lay down. Eat some poutine off the ground.
Sure. Okay, so you can find us on Instagram at Vanishing Dogs. You can find me at Liz Hamilton. It's Liz with two Z's. I spell it wrong. Sam is at Sam Sketchbook. Our intro and outro music is by Greta Russell, which is @noise_wife. She's fantastic. Oh, yeah. And as always, if you have thoughts, comments, concern, please present them in a sexy way on our email, which is museumofthevanishingdog@gmail.com.
Give us a review on iTunes. Or don't.
Or don't. It really it brought us such delight.
Nothing matters.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah,
all right.
Fuck you, don't.
Well, thank you very much. We'll see you later. See you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.